Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Litton. I am the host of Spotlight on Youth, a radio show dedicated to social and legal trends impacting the rights and well-being of children across the country. Spotlight on Youth is a project of the Children's Law Center, Inc., a not-for-profit children's rights legal services organization. The show is being streamed live over the Internet and will be available on demand after its conclusion. We encourage you to participate by asking our guests questions live on air by dialing 347-994-1149. That's 347-994-1149. And to indicate you have a question, you're going to press the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and you'll be placed in the queue to be on the air. Also, feel free to log into the chat room and pose questions there. Today we're talking about the Baby Elmo program, a program for incarcerated teen parents, which began as a collaborative project between the Youth Law Center and Georgetown University's Early Learning Project. During the past 2 decades, the number of children with an incarcerated parent has increased significantly. This includes a group of fathers who themselves are under the age of 21, often coming from households where there's an incarcerated parent or an absent father figure. In fact, recent estimates suggest that parental incarceration affects 1 in every 40 children in the United States, with 92% of all incarcerated parents being fathers and an estimated 30% of all incarcerated male teens being fathers. Historically, correctional facilities have offered little opportunity for contact with outside friends and family, contributing to parent absenteeism. This absence of a father figure has been linked to poor development outcomes and other risk factors. The Baby Elmo program is designed to intervene and address this problem by offering parenting classes and structured visitation with the hope of forming and maintaining bonds between children and their incarcerated teen fathers. The program was specifically created so that it could be implemented independently by juvenile facilities with limited outside staffing and financial support. With us are 4 guests, all connected to the Baby Elmo program. We have Benjamin Riqueda, who joined the Youth Law Center in 2012 to serve as a Baby Elmo project coordinator. He oversees the implementation of the program at correctional facilities and trains those who will be teaching youth. Dr. Rachel Barr, who co-developed the Baby Elmo program with Carol Schoeffer. Rachel is an associate professor of psychology at Georgetown University. Her research focuses on learning and memory from television, books, and computers during infancy and the role of parent-child interactions on learning. Our other 2 guests both have hands-on experience implementing this program at Cuyahoga Hills Juvenile Correctional Facility in Ohio. Brian Forrest is a facility intervention administrator at Cuyahoga Hills. He has worked for the Ohio Department of Youth Services for more than 14 years, starting his career as a juvenile corrections officer. And Francois Smith, who has worked at Cuyahoga Hills for 10 years and is a primary trainer for the Baby Elmo program. Francois has trained and helped more than 25 participants change from fathers into dads. So I'd like to welcome all 4 of you to the show.
Thank you.
Hello. It's good to be here.
So I have provided, a little bit of background on the program, but I want to hear more about sort of the issue that led to its development. Rachel, do you want to start us off?
Right. So Carol and I met in a 0-3 training program, and we were discussing our relative work. Carol had worked as a youth advocate for almost 30 years, and I had been studying how children learn from various different sources. And I was particularly interested in how children were using TV at that time. And we had worked on a program called Sesame Beginnings. And in it, Baby Elmo and his dad would learn new things and practice new things and sing songs. And Carol had thought that this might be a particularly useful tool to help young parents. And she had a client who was incarcerated and who had not been able to visit with her child. And even when she'd been able to visit with her child, there wasn't very much provided in the way of toys or an environment that would allow for her to have a successful visit with her child. So between the two of us, it seemed like a good plan to try and figure out a way that we could provide information to incarcerated youth that would be in an accessible way. So we thought about these Baby Elmo videos and how they might really show how to interact with your baby in a really easy, accessible way. It didn't require a lot of reading. It didn't require a lot of sorting. It was actually a lot of visual information. And then we thought, well, if you're going to have parenting classes, there's no point unless you visit with the baby. As Carol puts it, it's like having driver's ed without the driving. So we thought if there was going to be a program like this, there would have to be an opportunity for fathers to visit with their babies, and the place where they visited would have to be child-friendly. So this would have to be something that would allow for fathers to sort of try out some of these new games with their babies and for babies to feel comfortable enough to interact with their fathers. So we started contacting a lot of different facilities in California, and they were very, very responsive to allowing us to start implementing this program. Initially, we called it the Parenting Program for Incarcerated Teens, and in the very first site in Orange County, the fathers in the program initially said, oh, so when are we doing that Baby Elmo program again? And so from then on, it was called the Baby Elmo Program.
Thanks. And that's really a nice overview of the program. I also want to hear, I mentioned some of the research that shows the impact of having an absent father figure. And I was wondering just also what maybe all four of you had seen working with teen fathers and sort of the effect of not having contact with kids. So that led to the development. I don't know if anyone has anything else to add to that.
Well, we noticed that a lot of the fathers had not necessarily had contact with their own fathers. And Ben, do you want to talk a little more?
Sure. I mean, I think I can share a story that from an interview or some interaction I had with one of our sites in Orange, who's been with us the longest. And it was very interesting because as a interacting with this one youth throughout the duration of the program, he would start to open up a little bit more and start to talk about his own experiences being raised and his experience with his father too. And I think toward the end of the program, as an aside, we also were noticing that he was a little bit of a behavior problem. He was getting into fights and claiming his gang. And as the program went on, he really started to calm down and was looking forward to these visits. And for the last visit I saw him, it was about a month before he was going to get released, we were talking about his plans for the future, and I thought it was really nice how he started to create this world that was separate from the world he had grown up. You know, he had never really known his father. His father was incarcerated and then in and out of his life. But the instances he was telling me were so touching. I thought, like, he had, for instance, he said, oh, I've never gotten to go to the beach. My father never took me to go to the beach. I really want to take my son to the beach. He was also saying, camping, I've never been on, you know, away from home for more than two nights. I really want to take my child and explore California and, you know, go see the woods and things like that. I thought it was really sweet, this kind of identity change that comes over the kids, too, sometimes. It's very powerful. Like Mr. Smith likes to say a lot of time, there's a lot of powerful stuff comes out of the program. I think that's definitely true.
Also, I'd like to add to what he just finished talking about. You know, these young men, many of them, as we said, do not have their fathers involved in their lives. So initially it's about them, you know, being able to see their significant other at the time, their girlfriend or whatnot. But after about the fourth visit, you see these young men begin to really take ownership in terms of, it's not about me, you know. It's about me being the significant other that I didn't have. In other words, their father not being in their lives, and they'll talk to you openly about what life was like for them growing up. And I oftentimes ask them, well, what would it be like? What's going to be different with you? He says, you know, if my father was in my life, I would probably not be here. And they take it very seriously. And So after about the third or fourth visit, when it's, you know, it's no longer about seeing the girlfriend, and it becomes, you know, they're more concerned about, you know, did the baby get the medicine, or are we financially able to take care of some things to help the child? And they start doing some wonderful things. The powerful stories that you'll hear about in Elmo has to center around, you know, youth dealing with loss and separation issues. As soon as the child leaves after the first visit, you can see it on their face. You know, I made a mistake. The child needs me to be home, and I'm here. So it's kind of deep. It's powerful.
Yeah. I think there's a nice identity change that really happens throughout the program, too. I coined the phrase turning fathers into dads, which came from one of the probation officers in our site in San Bernardino. And he said there was just a moment where the site had gotten together and thrown a birthday party to help this young man throw a birthday party for his child who was turning one, and he had never had a birthday party for himself before, and so the staff helped him write invitations and wrap presents, and they invited his family. And one of the probation officers who was helping out on that project said, you know, that was the moment he knew that this father, you know, because anybody can be a father, you know, you can, you know, animals father, they're young, but he had really turned from a father into a dad, which I thought was really nice. Yeah, it's this nice identity shift where you start to think about things in a different light like that.
So the program was developed for teen parents, and really specifically, I think, the age range of the babies are 6 months to 36 months. Maybe we can get an overview of the components of the parenting program, and then we can go into its implementation and impact. Rachel, do you want to start us on that one?
Right. So what we're really trying to focus on is ways to help the fathers and the babies connect to form a relationship. And there's a lot that we know about parenting and how babies respond in different situations. And so what we wanted to do was bring what, you know, many years that we've sort of found looking at these interactions and bring that into the program and pick the key factors that we know are important. So the first thing that is really quite difficult for these fathers is that the babies may not know them or not have really met them before. So the first thing the father has to learn is that babies do form relationships and that it will take them some time to form relationships. So they might be wary, they might not, they might take a little while to get approach the father, they may not even want to come in contact with the father even the first or the second or even the third visit. And that can be really difficult if you didn't know that that was just the baby's way of figuring out what is happening in the world. So that seems to be a really important component for the fathers to understand, that the baby needs to get to know them. Then the second component is, if you want someone to sort of get to know you, you should find out about them. So you should try and figure out what they're interested in and follow what the child is doing. And so the next component is sort of following around as the child explores the world. And babies actually find this really, really exciting. And a lot of times fathers say, oh, well, you know, I probably would have done that anyway, but I just didn't know that's something that I was supposed to do. And so they can follow and pay attention to the baby, and really that shifting that focus, just as Mr. Smith was saying, away from just them thinking about themselves to thinking about the baby. And then the next part is like, okay, well, if you've found out what they're interested in, then you can start to talk to them about it. We know from so much information that babies learn to talk from people talking to them. And so if the baby is really interested in a ball on the ground and they pick up the ball, then the father can say, you've got the ball. And that simply helps the baby start to make the connections and also helps the baby understand that somebody is paying attention to them. And then the next part is also praising them for and encouraging them in their exploration of the world. Again, this is something that we know is really effective for young children in terms of forming relationships and responding to other people if they know that the other person is encouraging them. So if the baby picks up the ball and throws it across the room, and then the father can say, you've got the ball, you threw it, great job. And So it doesn't have to be a big deal. Like one father was learning, the baby was learning how to walk, and she started to learn how to walk during one of the visits that he was seeing her sort of totter along. And this is a really exciting milestone, obviously, for a child around 1 year of age. And in one of the videos is a song called You Did Something Good Today, Hooray, 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 showing the baby learning to walk. And so he was like, oh, you walked. I wish I could remember the song. But he was really focusing in on what she was doing and celebrating with her achievement in the world. And that's exactly what that one moment there is exactly what the program is designed to do and to help form that relationship across time. So getting to know the baby is really the key thing, and focusing in and zoning on what the baby is doing, and following that, talking to the baby, praising them, are all of the key components of the program. And then the father learning to put all of those things together with their own baby, who has all of their own individual personality and wants and likes and dislikes, and him learning to navigate that and learning to know that his own child.
And how long has the program, how long ago was it developed?
We started in 2008, was when the first program was implemented in California.
Great. So Brian and Francois, maybe you can also tell the audience a little bit about, explain what Cuyahoga Hills is, but how did you hear about this program, and what made you interested in implementing at your facility?
Okay, well, first of all, we had a program in place called, it's more like a father's group, and it met sporadically, and we didn't really have a lesson plan. There's no objectives or goals, and the purpose of the meetings were basically to plan for a special family day. So it really wasn't geared toward fathers visiting with their youth more or their child. It was more of a family-oriented visit. So probably late 2010, Ms. Needham, the superintendent, was looking for ways to connect fathers to their babies and came across the Vera Institute, who gave her a video that I remember going to her office. She called me in, and I went in, and I thought she was watching Sesame Street because I saw Elmo on the screen. I thought she maybe had kind of lost it, but she said, I want you to take a look at this. So we started watching it and thought that this would be a good thing for Cuyahoga Hills, just because of, you know, it was more teaching the young man who really haven't been a part of their child's life how to connect to that child and give them some father skills once they go ahead and leave the institution.
Before you piggyback, if you can also just explain what Cuyahoga Hills Juvenile Facility is, because we have listeners from all over the country.
Okay, Cuyahoga Hills Juvenile Corrections Facility, we house 12 to 21-year-olds. These are all adjudicated youth who have committed what would be a felon if they were charged as an adult. So they have different types of stays depending on their crime. Sometimes we see them come back here and there, but that's what our facility is, and it's with the state of Ohio.
Thank you. Okay, so I think I'm sorry about that interruption, but I just wanted to make sure that our audience knows.
Okay.
I think you were saying to piggyback.
To piggyback on what Brian was talking about, you know, once we have several young men that are have had children. Many of them didn't have relationships at all with the significant others once they became incarcerated, and those that did, once we began to get started with this process, we had a lot of feedback from young men that were interested, and once they showed the interest and we, you know, signed, they have the appropriate paperwork signed and things, the ball began to roll, you know, as Dr. Rachel was talking about, it is amazing what happens when you see a child that is a child having children, and they ended up, you know, starting with attachment and being nervous about, I don't know, what do I do with the child? But you see a significant difference between a young man who has little brothers and sisters to one who has no brothers and sisters, or the brothers and sisters are older than him, because the ones that have little brothers and sisters, they feel more comfortable when the child comes into the room for the first time, opposed to the ones who have no one to connect to, which kind of puts us in a situation where, you know, fathers start to grow into learning about their children, the stages of childhood development when they're taught in these classes and what to expect, especially in the first visit, because a lot of them are afraid and not sure. So I kind of open the air for them and talk about what their relationships were like when they were growing up, and things that they did or did not have, or what they would like to have for their child. And then when you hear them begin to express that, and then you set up the first visit and they actually begin the process of being in the ELMO program, it's pretty powerful stuff, as Ben was saying earlier, to see them develop over a period of time.
That's one of the things I like about this program, too, is this unity and a bridge between what Rachel's bringing with that's really cutting-edge child development practices that fit so nicely into practices that, you know, what Francois can bring to the youth as well. I mean, you know, really, it's, we think about Baby Elmo, it's just building relationships, you know, and it's, I thought it was interesting that Francois brought up that, you know, the youth is also kind of nervous. You know, he's coming in and, you know, it's maybe been a while since he's seen his baby, or maybe his baby was born when he was, you know, while he was incarcerated. So I think it's nice to have, you know, the first lesson be about attachment, and that there's some science behind that babies need some time to develop relationships. And then on the other hand, you know, you can also say that, you know, it takes two to develop a relationship. So there's also that fathering piece. So, yeah, I think it's really nice.
And, you know, with that attachment piece, a youth that has the family come in, as we say, we have the caregiver there, being the mother or the grandparent, and then this child, the youth that's incarcerated usually wants to walk right up to the child and grab the baby, because he's been telling everybody about his child, and he's about to have this program start, and he starts today. So he's excited. He's energetic about the child. You can see it in their face. They're nervous, whatever. And then when the child comes in the room and they reach their arms out to grab towards the child turns away from the child and hugs onto the caregiver, which you can see it kind of, you have to coach them through that process. Because we talk about it before it actually takes place, but when it actually, you're in the room and then this baby that's their child, no matter what the age of the child is, when it kind of turns away from the father, you see a lull in this young man, and they begin to become saddened. And, you know, we go over and I say, remember, give it some time, give the baby some space, and after a few minutes, in some cases, like Dr. said, they may even take one or two visits, but oftentimes, after about 30, 40 minutes, you know, then all of a sudden this child is playing peekaboo with the father. And then, and oftentimes I've seen where the family, the father is able to actually pick the child up and begin to play games with the child. So it's kind of, it's really good to see.
Yeah, and the other thing, just to add on to, oh, sorry, can I just?
No, go on, Rachel.
The other thing is, like, that once the child starts responding as well, this also, of course, is you know, that feels incredible, when, especially when you're a parent and this child is responding to you. And so that really is the biggest motivator in this program, is how that child is able to give so much back so quickly. And so I think that's another reason why the fathers, we've you know, done science, you know, sort of some science on this, and actually measured whether or not things change. But what we see is this progressive increase in the quality of the interactions across these different sessions. You know, this is a measurable change in behavior, and I think it's partly because that baby starts, once that, and we see this, we measure the baby's response and the parent's response, and we sort of see that go in lockstep, where as the baby starts responding more, the father is giving more back, and then the baby gives more back. And we have this upward spiral, and we can really see that in hard numbers as well when we measure it and calculate statistics on it. But what it really is just people going back and forth and this upward spiral of that forming that relationship and that child giving something and responding, and then that parent having to deal with the fact that sometimes the baby doesn't respond. I think that's a really incredibly difficult thing for the fathers to cope with, and yet they do. And then they just keep on going, and then the baby does respond, and it's incredibly reinforcing.
Yes, yes.
We have some questions coming in from some audience, and then I really want to turn and hear some concrete stories about the successes and challenges, and even from a facility perspective, how you open up the environment to and say this is what we're going to do. But here are some of the questions. We've been talking about this program that it is for teen fathers. Is this program applicable to teen mothers that are incarcerated?
Yes, and we have had teen mothers participate in the program. It's just that it's many, many fewer, so only about 10% of our participants, or maybe not even that many, have been mothers. But yes, this program is equally applicable to both. It's just, as you stated at the beginning, 92% of parents who are incarcerated are in fact fathers, and that's the same in the juvenile population that we've seen so far as well.
Okay, and then the other two questions that we've had come in I think are more about like the longer term issues, and so one is, how about if you're dealing with a teen father who is going to be incarcerated for several years, how do they continue to have access, have you seen, with this program? And then the other is, if the parent is coming out, does the program help with co-parenting? Because that must be very frustrating. I mean, for a parent that's in, that they really don't limited decision-making, but then also the changes that when a parent does come out, and then both trying to co-parent. So those are two different questions, but they kind of go to more of a longer-term aspect.
Ben,
I don't know who would like to start.
This is Ben.
Big thing.
Those are two very good questions. I think working with the facilities, and we're in two state correctional facilities in Ohio and in Connecticut, and then county detention facilities, mostly in Southern California. Whenever I go down and introduce the program and go in and train the trainers, I like to say that the relationship is ongoing, that, you know, the skills, the curriculum only lasts for, you know, a certain amount of time. It's five skills repeated. But after that, the youth is still a father, you know, or the youth is, you know, still a mother. And I like to, and what normally happens is the visits are ongoing. So, and that's been especially true in Cuyahoga, which I think is great, which is really great, because there's no reason why the relationship should end after you've, you know, supposedly finished up the curriculum. I mean, that's really when it begins. You know, I think that's really when the relationship is kind of, the foundation is laid, and now it's time to really build something upon that foundation. And sort of with that second piece too, that's the direction we're trying to take the program, is develop some community partnerships on a site-by-site basis to really bring in different services for these young men, so that they can continue to be successful and positive presences in their children's lives. And these young women as well. And interestingly enough, in Cuyahoga in Cleveland is where we're just starting to pilot some of these partnerships. So we're reaching out into the community to make that bridge, to continue that relationship. I like to, you know, Baby Elmo is kind of about the relationship between the father and the child, and that goes both ways. And then, just like your listener was asking, it's about the relationship between the father and the community, and we're trying to strengthen that through these community partnerships with parenting organizations and other reentry organizations.
And we've also partnered with another facility, with another group who has really focused on co-parenting relationships. And so we're trying to develop a program in the community and just sort of testing that out at the moment. It should start very soon in California to see if we can figure out a more integrated program afterwards as well.
Yeah, and that's out
in Fresno.
What I found that, I apologize. What I found here at Cuyahoga Hills, once the program begins and we begin the classes and the filming and having their visits, once they graduate, so to speak, from the curriculum of the program, which, as you said, is a five-step program, the visitation continues. And, it depends on the location of how far they have to travel and the availability of the families being able to travel to and fro to be able to visit, they end up continuing their visits regularly, and they become extremely attached to the issues and the problems that are happening for the child outside of the institution where this program is designed, where the youth are not allowed to discuss during their visit anything to do with the personal issues that may develop between the two families. It's more so about the child and the incarcerated youth being able to build a positive relationship, learning how to have fun, and learning how to talk to your child, where after they pretty much, close to graduation, the issues, which we do every week, believe me, it's intense in terms of dealing with those issues during the week, but when it comes to the visit, it's about the baby and the child. And then when they graduate, during those visits, they may talk some about that, but any youth that's in our program here at Cuyahoga Hills knows that that is sacred time, so to speak. This is your time to spend with your child. Not about the mother of the child. Those issues are secondary. Right now, it's about you using the time to be that father or that dad to your child. So it's like I said, and then on the other side of that, as I said, we partnered with some people, and I'm kind of excited about it because, a lot of times when it gets close to time for a child to be released from placement, they're scared. They're nervous. They're not sure of how am I going to be able to do A, B, and C. I don't have any money. And as we talk about a lot, unfortunately, we don't want them to go back to doing certain things that they did to get incarcerated to gain money. So we try to put them in, positions to be able to have a job. And my thing is, like I tell them, our slogan here at Cuyahoga Hills is children spell love, T-I-M-E, not M-O-N-E-Y.
Yeah. So you've started to share some stories, success stories. I'd like to hear some more from each of your perspectives of what you've seen in change in the system and in change in the kids' lives, if there's other stories you'd like to share.
Well, I have a whole lot of them. one that comes to mind when it comes to youth that come in that are incarcerated. Once they're incarcerated, they may have a child already born or one that's about to be born. So take the child that has been in the world for, say, a year or 2 years, or in some cases 4 years. The youth was incarcerated was able to spend time with the child before he was incarcerated. Then once the child comes in, our youth that we have here see the child for the first time, say, in a year. That time that the child, they were separated from each other, a two-year-old going to see its father for the first time in a year, there's some things that you see in the child that we have incarcerated here. They become, it concerns them where they really realize that I totally messed up. We have one young man that comes to mind. Like I said, initially it was about seeing the mother of the child, and he was concerned about what she was doing. Well, unfortunately for him, she became pregnant. And obviously it wasn't because of him. It was an outside of him. And he had to deal with those issues and learn that regardless of what, you can only control yourself. And the child that he has attitude to be able to be placed in this world, that's his responsibility. No matter what everybody else is doing, he still has to stand up and take responsibility for his actions. And part of that is dealing with the tough stuff. So you'll have youth that we've had children, that, late women that have had other children, and they end up having to come into the facility pregnant, and the guy finding out for the very first time that the young lady is pregnant. And instead of focusing on what she's into and focus on that time of, you know, making sure it's a positive relationship being built for him and his son or his daughter. We've had kids that initially didn't want anything to really do with the child. It was more about the mother. And they became so attached to their children that their behavior, I mean, you could see from the numbers of incidents that they were involved with when they first came to the facility, opposed to being into the ELMO program. And, this, you know, once you're in the program, you know, everybody wants to hold that over your head. If you do A, B, and C, you're not going to be able to have your visits. Well, I think it's important to state in this program that everyone understand it's like Ben said, you're always a father. And it's important that the administration is on board with not stopping visitation because of one or two problems that may happen during the week. And that's something that I have to commend Kiowa Hills Juvenile Correctional Facility for. Our superintendent is extremely good, and she would sit me down and say, Mr. Smith, if I don't cancel it, it doesn't get canceled, which kind of helps me because all eyes are on me about, you know, he shouldn't have this visit because of A, B, and C, but then once the treatment teams find out that it's a progression and these youth are learning and they're taking ownership for it, the behaviors change. And you don't see the kid that's acting up on a regular basis. Now he's more concerned about, can I, you know, use my money that I make here at the institution to send home for diapers and formula and things of that nature.
It's important to what you're saying. Visitation shouldn't be used as a reward. This is, you know, we're teaching, and we want to foster that bond, continue,
right.
No matter
right.
what is happening. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. And actually, and counterintuitively, once that's employed, the number of behavior incidents we're starting to find are going down. So even though it's not being used as a, you know, visitation occurs regardless. Behavior actually is also improving within the facility. That's very preliminary so far, but it does seem that that's the pattern in two different facilities so far. So I think that's actually a really important thing to know, that it becomes more a self-motivating thing for the fathers to really change their attitude. We have a lot of other things where we ask them about their attitudes, and we see that their attitudes towards their baby and about their baby and about the future of their baby actually does change significantly. They become more aware of their influence on their child. We ask them about their influence on the child at the beginning. We ask them about their influence on the child at the end. And they are significantly more aware of how much of what they do influences their child. So it's a more self-motivating thing of thinking about this other person. Rather than it being a reward for good behavior or not, they seem to be changing their behavior as a function of being in this program. You tell your story, and then I've got another favorite story too, because all of us have got our favorite stories.
Great. So this is one youth down in Southern California again, and he, when they were thinking about starting the program, they only had a few youth to choose from, and he was in the ideal situation because the baby's mother lived pretty close and they could have regular transportation. However, he was an extremely showed a lot of problem behaviors, and specifically fighting, and he was in a neighborhood that was very gang-oriented, and he had a lot of gang tattoos, and what he was known for is, you know, in certain classes he would come and get into fights and claim his neighborhood. And what I noticed, just even speaking with him and speaking with the probation workers who helped run the program down there, is that there's just, because they believed in him and because they believed in his humanity and that father-child bond really, really changed him. And even talking with him later, he was able to tell me, he was like, oh yeah, you know, before these visits, I was a real knucklehead, and I would get into fights, But now I really want to see my kid, and I really want to be a father for my child, and I want to be a good example for him, even though I'm in here, you know. And I thought that was so powerful to me, that he was not only did his behavior change, but he was able to recognize, and almost there's like this metacognition going on, in a sense, like, where he was able to realize how far he had changed, and that was a good thing. And speaking with some of the guards in that facility, he had raised his behavior. He was at the lowest behavior level, and was able to raise his behavior level all the way up to the highest, so where he was able to get certain privileges and things like that. And I think that was just a great example where even the facility was a little nervous. Oh no, what's going to happen? But really, it worked out well.
And another sort of, there's also been another couple of sort of surprising effects that, and this one particular, one of the stories that I think is really important is, one child came in and she was learning the letters of the alphabet. And there's, in almost all of the facilities, we have these tiles, these really colorful tiles that you can put out that have alphabet letters on them. And it's for really practical reasons, like you want a soft surface. And the rooms are often, at Cuyahoga Hills, it's a permanent Baby Elmo room, but in many other facilities, they have to use the room for multiple purposes. So you have to quickly be able to put out these tiles, put out the toys, put up a few posters, and change it into the Baby Elmo room. So the little girl would come in, and she pointed out letters from her name, and the father was becoming, you know, really interested in and working with her and everything. But it turned out that he had had a long-term reading disability, and he really had very, very poor literacy levels. But he decided that because she was learning to read, he wanted to get additional reading support. And, in fact, the facility was able to arrange that for him. So his reading performance actually improved because he wanted to be able to start reading with his child as she was learning to read as well. So sort of seeing the world through a different set of eyes is... you know, has all of these different unexpected, in some ways, consequences. We thought that the behaviours during the visits would change, and they did. But the long-term, these sort of differences in attitudes and differences in behaviours was something that was sort of more over and above what we had anticipated.
And, you know, as you're all sharing your stories, you're talking about the changes you saw in the teens. But I'm also hearing sort of the changes in you, right? I mean, and how much you're getting from all of it. So I kind of want to hear from an institution's perspective. Do you see change by bringing, you know, babies and kids on a regular basis into an institution? Do you see it being impacting those who work in the institution and other effects on sort of the way that the institution's viewing the kids that they have in their custody?
I definitely would agree there is a change. Staff, you know, first you hear, okay, we're starting this Elmo program, and once you begin to see the infants coming through a metal detector, so to speak, and having to pass a metal detector, and all the staff standing up and marveling over these beautiful kids that you see coming in the building, then you want to know who do they belong to. And then you find out the young man that we have in our institution, excuse me, and, you know, you say, oh, it looks just like you, or, you know, and the youth who has the child, it's pretty powerful to see their faces when they begin to form a sense of pride, like, you know, this is my child, and staff look at them differently, and they hold them to a higher level of expectations, because now we know you do have a child. A lot of times staff don't know who has a child or who does, but once you find out, staff begin to expect more from those youth, and we hold them accountable to a higher degree, and I guess you could say to subliminally, I guess we do, because we want them to succeed. And you'll find them, staff always tell me about the conversations they've had with the youth that are incarcerated after their visits, because that's a hard pill to swallow. You know, the child's walking out of the building with the mother and or grandparent, and he is here, and he's looking out the window, and he's not thinking about Carver Hills. He's thinking about, what have I done? What can I do to help? So to answer your question, I guess in a nutshell, staff definitely changed. You know, to have staff buy into the program is a powerful thing. As you said, we have a permanent room for Elmo. I mean, it looks like Romper Room. It's like a Sesame Street clip that we have here in terms of the actual room that we utilize. So when the child comes, and even staff, when they go and see where the room is, if they haven't seen it, it's like an island in the middle of the city, so to speak, because it's I kind of want to bring my kids up in here and play, you know. So it's a good atmosphere. It's positive. It's a win-win. It's people are being they're actually supporting it a lot more now than say in the beginning.
Ben and Rachel, this is in other institutions as well as Cuyahoga Hills, as you mentioned. Are there sort of similar challenges and lessons learned that you'd like to share for other who listening there that may be thinking, maybe we should be thinking about this?
Yeah, I think the other thing is that, you know, as you can probably tell from listening to Brian and Francois, that it takes a lot of organization within the facility in order to coordinate these visits and make sure that, you know, it fits within the program and you can find out, you know, carve out the staff time. And so I think that is something that really is a significant challenge, and making sure that the there are certain barriers like transportation. If families are coming from a long distance, you know, what day, what time, how flexible can you be about when these visits occur? And setting up the right space. The space has been really critical in terms of the children wanting to come in and play. You want to have a good playroom, quite simply, for them to feel comfortable, and then the father can feel comfortable as well. So I think these are all things that, and this is something that Ben walks through every facility where we start to introduce this program, is thinking about the logistics. Where would it be? What would happen? The thing that happened in Cuyahoga and in some other facilities that I thought was pretty amazing was that the fathers, some who were quite artistic, and they recruited their friends who were artistic and helped paint the walls. So there's some facilities which have big Elmo murals or have little kids' signs sort of painted in the rooms, and the rooms are colorful and brightly decorated and really inviting and warm. And so that has been something that I think has been really amazing in terms of everybody coming together to make the program happen. But you need to sort of say, okay, we need a space, we need staff who are really, you know, able to work really well with families, coordinate with families, and like there's a lot of steps in this process. But at the same time, across time, once this program gets impacted, there was another place where there was a graduation. And they were trying to sort of figure out, well, should we bring food or whatever? And someone came in and said, oh, look, you know, I know you're doing that Baby Elmo graduation. Here's, you know, $20 just to go, and you can just go and buy some food. And then other organizations have said, you know, okay, we can provide diapers, or let me just contact our local charity and see what can be, you know, brought to sort of support this program. So I think once it gets started, quite a lot of things come together and to really make it work. And it's been quite sustainable. Like I said, we started in 2008 and it's still going in most of the facilities that we started, and we sort of implement it every other year in different facilities.
To add on to what the doctor just mentioned, you know, one of the challenges that you will definitely come across is you have to have everybody on board, because there are a lot of things that happen before a visit takes place. And the people that you have working the front line to make sure the phone calls are made and the paperwork is together, and, you know, you're talking to the child and you're giving them the classes and you're taping this and you're having to find coverage for your units, and you have to make sure that the people that have the power to make certain decisions make those decisions for you, because the people on the front line making this work, they it's a lot of extra work involved. It's not just making a phone call, say you have a visit, and there you go, you get started. There are a lot of things, as doctors mentioned, that go behind this, so it's very important to the initial explanation of how the program works, and the actual beginning of the implementation, and to really support each other, because you have some things that can be very frustrating at times, and then the outcome being where, you know, once you actually, like she says, get the visits rolling, it's just a powerful, powerful experience to witness these young men being able to, you know, have aha moments for themselves and catching them doing good, opposed to what you saw before they even began the ELMO program. So these are a lot of things to be, you know, taken into consideration. But it's working.
Well, we have about 10 minutes left, and you're just mentioning, like, aha moments. I kind of want to hear sort of your own personal aha moments, maybe the hopes for continued development of this program, and any other final thoughts you want to share with our audience about helping incarcerated teen fathers.
I myself,
so
I have, this is Francois. One thing I'd say is I have a young man who, you know, his behavior here in the building is he believes in himself. He's always has. He's an outgoing kid, a very aggressive kid. It was all about me. He had this attitude, it was all about me. Well, here in Cleveland, unfortunately, we've had a lot of bad weather. And these parents and families are having to have transportation in to the facility. There's a lot of sacrifice, and I talk a lot to these young men about sacrifice and what the parents and the grandparents, the mothers of the children are dealing with outside of here. And this particular young man, he would get upset when the mother would not be able to make it to a visit. And not long ago, a few weeks ago, we had a very bad storm, and the child was sick. And he took it upon himself to, he made sure staff contacted me to let me know the visit was already set up. But he said he didn't want his daughter to be out in the cold. He didn't want her and the baby's mother to be out here to have to deal with the elements. And when he came to me, he cried. He said, "Mr. Smith, I never thought I would feel like this, but this little girl is really my life." And that, for me, it was an aha moment that this kid really understood, you know, it's a lot involved when you become a parent. So I'll pass that on. Who's next?
Thank you.
Well, just this morning we had a youth who was released, and he came down and said his parting ways to some of the administration staff down here. But before when he was in the program, I mean, his behavior, I didn't think the kid would ever go home. I mean, he was constantly in trouble, and I remember him making a remark to one of the secretaries down here saying that I just need to go home. He's like, "I've had a visit. I'm tired of being here. I need to be home for my child." And he actually went home today and was very happy about being a father and getting ready to take care of his children.
Is there anything else you might want to say to other administrators about, you know, making this happen?
Yeah, I would just say if you're thinking about it, you know, you can contact us here at Cuyahoga Hills. I mean, we are more than welcome to have you come see a visit, see our institution, see the room, talk with Mr. Smith, our trainers, sit in on a visit with a kid or sit on one of the sessions where Mr. Smith does his thing and teaches the kids different techniques or whatever you want to call it. We're more than welcome to help anybody who wants to be helped.
Thank you. Okay. Rachel?
Well, apart from sort of all of the, you know, individual stories, I think the other thing that is really my aha moment is that we need to do, as scientists, we need to do a better job of really taking what we know and turning it into something that can be helpful. And I think this is an example of what we know about parenting and putting it together with all of the right pieces and in the right place to make a change or a significant change for not only for the fathers but for the babies as well. One of the changes that the fathers say, it turns out that if you follow that across time and other studies, if the child, if the father feels like he has more influence on the child, in other studies it suggests that the child has better self-esteem later on. So it's not necessarily only going to help the father himself, but also ultimately help that child growing up. And so I think my aha moment is that, you know, we really have to translate better and figure out how to get all of this knowledge that we're sort of collecting here in universities into ways that might be useful to people.
Great. Ben?
So, let's see. There's been a lot from just different site visits, but I think the one that sticks out in my mind the most was I ended up coming to Cuyahoga Hills on around Father's Day, this past Father's Day, and I was I remember I was driving back from another meeting, and I called up Francois, and he said, "Oh yeah, you should come on down. We're having a little get together." And you know, I was coming back from some meetings, sort of in a post meeting frame of mind, you know, like a little drain. But I thought, I like those guys over at the Hill, so I should swing by. And I came down, and Francois was beaming, and he said, "Oh, you know, you came at the right moment." And he takes me through, and you know, you have to enter the facility, you have to go through one door, and then go through another door, and wait till you get cleared, and the people have to unlock a bunch of doors, and it can be pretty stark. But when I went into this area where they were holding this Father's Day party and a graduation party for all the baby Elmo dads, it was like the scene changed 180 degrees, and there was kids running around, and there was food, and somebody handed me a plate and with some salad and some chicken, and I got to see the whole baby Elmo community, and that, in my mind, that was the most special, because to interact with the fathers, and a little sub-story where I was talking with one of the fathers about he was getting released soon, and he was thinking about what was going to happen next. And he broke off our conversation, mid-conversation, because out of the corner of his eye, he saw that his son, I think he was 2 years old, was playing with the piano, and he was worried the key guard was going to smash his finger. So he just broke off and went and picked him up and then came back to finish our conversation. But I thought, like, moments like this, to go back to what Rachel was talking about, is that the science, it's so powerful in just unlocking the goodness in so many people. I came into this facility, and it felt more like a family reunion, where people were just celebrating the relationship with their family. And that was sort of my aha moment. And I thought, well, like, if we can really have this behavior change with these young fathers and have these these little babies happy to see them and happy to play with them and watching the fathers change diapers, then we should really try to start making some strides to make sure that continues on for the whole life of the father, because fathering is, that bond is forever. Fathering is forever. And that was really my aha moment. I just felt so privileged to be a part of that. I mean, it was really greater than I could have ever imagined. And I felt so thankful to be just a small part to facilitate these moments, and hopefully to now push them forward out into the community.
I have to say something about that fatherhood program. I have to give a major kudos to my partner, Ms. McElroy, because she is a person that really did a lot of work to put that whole program together, and that is what tied into actually having an Elmo program for us. So I just had to put that in there.
Well, Francois, Brian, Ben, Rachel, thank you so much for participating on today's show. This is a project that's clearly having a great impact and has so much potential. So thank you all for being here.
Well, thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
And for people who
Yeah. For people who want more information, you can contact the Youth Law Center at ylc.org, the Early Learning Project at elp.georgetown.edu. And if you want to contact Cuyahoga Hills, you can reach them through dys.ohio.gov. Our next show will highlight Scenarios USA, a national organization that uses writing and film to foster youth leadership, advocacy, and self-expression. And it gives students from marginalized communities a voice on issues that impact their lives. To stay informed about upcoming shows, you can either follow us here on Blog Talk Radio or visit the Children's Law Center's website at www.childrenslawky.org. So take care and see you next time on Spotlight on Youth. And thank you all again. Goodbye.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
It was great.